Doctor's Kitchen. Recipes, health, lifestyle. Welcome to the Doctor's Kitchen podcast. The show about food, lifestyle, medicine, and how to improve your health today. I'm Dr. Rupi, your host. I'm a medical doctor, I study nutrition, and I'm a firm believer in the power of food and lifestyle as medicine. Join me and my expert guests where we discuss the multiple determinants of what allows you to lead your best life.
Anna Jones is on the podcast today. She is one of my absolute favorite cooks. Her food, her ethos around injecting flavor are so aligned to my way of eating. And it was an absolute joy to also host her on the pod as well as the YouTube channel where we cooked one of her delicious recipes from her latest cookbook. If you don't know Anna, she is a cook, writer, and regarded as the voice of modern vegetarian cooking, which I absolutely agree with. She's written favorites such as One Pot Pan Planet, A Modern Way to Eat, and many more that are always on a foodie's kitchen counter. And if you're a foodie who also loves their health, you'll probably have an Anna Jones book. Her latest book, Easy Wins, is where she takes 12 hero ingredients that are guaranteed to make your food taste great, such as lemons, olive oil, big fans of olive oil here at the Doctor's Kitchen, onions, peanut butter, mustard, tahini. If you're a Doctor's Kitchen foodie, you probably have most of these in your fridge or cupboards, and Anna has masterfully created meals that use these ingredients to boost the flavor and versatility of home cooking. The so-called capsule pantry, which is a term I absolutely love, and we explain what a capsule pantry is at the start of the podcast, is an awesome concept. And I think I'm going to start thinking about what would be in my own capsule pantry as well. I really hope you enjoy this wonderful conversation, and you'll be able to catch me cooking with Anna, like I said, on our YouTube channel as well as this podcast where I grill her about capers, ice cream, and chocolate. Learn more on the Doctor's Kitchen podcast. Remember, you can download the Doctor's Kitchen app for free. There's a 14-day free trial. If you want to get access to hundreds of recipes, you can change the serving sizes, you can share the recipes, you can build collections, you can see all the step-by-step images for every single recipe, and it's on iOS as well as Android, and we are adding a ton of new features this year as well. And you can also subscribe to the Eat, Listen, Read newsletter and the Seasonal Sundays newsletter completely free, where we do a deep dive into the benefits of an ingredient, the historical context of an ingredient. It could be ginger, it could be a spice, it could be a brassica vegetable. You guys love it and we love to write it. For now, this is my conversation with the wonderful Anna Jones. Before we get started, here is a quick word from the people who make this podcast possible.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at Burrow.com/ACAST.
Anna, tell us about capsule pantries. What is a capsule pantry?
A capsule pantry, I would get you to imagine your sort of capsule wardrobe. Okay. And this is your kind of food equivalent, basically.
Okay, so you need to tell me what a capsule wardrobe is, because my wife tells me about capsule wardrobes, but I don't think I've got a capsule wardrobe.
Well, a capsule wardrobe is when you've just got a really pared down, group of essential things, essential clothes. So it'd be your favorite jeans. It would be your white t-shirt. It would be, you know, your denim shirt and your blazer, the things that like the classics that you wear all the time. And so a capsule pantry to me is kind of the food equivalent of that. So it's the things that are evergreen in your kitchen, that are always useful, that you can't live without, that you rely on for kind of good food, good flavor, good, you know, joyful, delicious food. And I think quite often with cookbooks and in food, we can sort of be encouraged to buy these gigantic kind of arrays of things.
Yeah.
And obviously for you or I, who are cooks and recipe developers, you know, it's fantastic to have a gigantic pantry of spices. But it's not always practical for people from a cost perspective or also from a sort of kitchen size perspective to always have all of these things. So, you know, when I started writing this book, Easy Wins, I want to sort of drill down into the recipes of mine that people cook the most and the recipes that are useful to people and the recipes that kind of change their Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night dinners for the better. And I kind of sort of reverse engineered it. So I tried to think about what is it in the dishes that I make that I love, that my family love, that people come around for dinner and they're like, how did you make that? And what I realized was that I use quite a lot of these ingredients, which are kind of flavor shortcuts. And I guess that's where the phrase sort of easy wins came from.
Flavor shortcuts.
They're kind of things that if you add a tablespoon of mustard, of harissa, of miso, it is going to amp up the flavor of your dish, but without much effort. You know, these ingredients, there's 12 of them in the book that I've kind of built into a capsule pantry, they ask very little of you.
Yeah.
You know, they're the things that sit on the top shelf of your fridge, just hanging out,
yeah.
you know, for 3 or 4 months, asking nothing of you. They're using like a tiny little bit of fridge space. But when you get them out, when you open the jar, when you take a tablespoon out, that is like a massive flavor party. You know, if you think there's a you know, a recipe in the book that is like a chickpea, kale, you know, sort of stew. And yes, you know, all very sort of standard, nothing particularly, you know, dramatic. But then you stir in some harissa yogurt at the end and it transforms something that, you know, could have been a lackluster dinner in something that you're like, yes, I can't wait to eat this. Every bite is different and interesting and I want to cook this again. And so that's, to me, these 12 ingredients are the ingredients that make me a good cook and make my dinners sort of unreasonably delicious for the amount of time and effort that I put into cooking. Yeah.
You know what? It's such a good concept, an interesting idea of framing it, because I'm often asked whenever I cook for friends that exact question. How on earth do you do that? I've got the same ingredients, but for some reason, yours tastes different. It tastes delicious. It tastes moorish. It tastes unctuous. Like, what have you done? And I don't think I mentioned the fact that I put, you know, a bit of balsamic in there, or a bit of acidity, a bit of like, I mean, one of my favorite ingredients is soy sauce. It just adds like, you know, that umami.
Yeah.
And I use it outside of your typical cuisine that you'd usually use, like, you know, in Pan Asian cuisine, Japanese cuisine, etc. And you've distilled that in this book with your sort of 12 favorites. And I think that, it's because I don't think I've really appreciated that question and actually pondered on what kind of ingredients are my go-to.
And it's really interesting because for everyone, it will be different. So these are my 12 and these are the things that I love. But there were other things. There are other things kind of hanging around. It took me a while to get to this 12. It was, it was a bit of a kind of like, you know, food desert island discs moment where I was like, oh my God, but what if can I leave this out and can I leave that out? And I sort of toyed with using more unusual ingredients because I think the kind of like experimental sort of cook in me that spent years chefing in restaurants wanted to, you know, use more out there flavors and, you know, use things like yuzu koshu. I don't know if you've come across that, but it's like an amazing yuzu paste from Japan that kind of is bright and energetic and fun, the flavor of it. And I thought, you know, but then, you know, you have to go online.
Yeah.
You have to buy that, you know, not everyone can do that. And these 12, really are things that everyone can buy. And I would imagine most people will have 5, 6, 7 of these in their pantry already. And also, I think the thing for me quite often in cookbooks that I have a bit of a bugbear with is that, you know, you might buy an ingredient and there might be one recipe in that cookbook using that ingredient. Mm. And then you're stuck with a jar of rose petals or a jar of whatever else.
Yeah.
And you don't know how to use it again. So that's why I wanted to kind of keep it tight, this kind of pantry, because I wanted there to be 12, 13, 14, 15 recipes for each thing.
Yeah.
And also there's something I think really interesting in that, because underpinning the capsule pantry is, like, I've done a bit of a deeper dive in this book into flavor, into sort of how to lay a flavor, how to lay a texture, how to think about seasoning as a kind of journey. So not adding just salt at the beginning and then at the end on your table, but using salt kind of carefully throughout how you cook and remembering the salt that different ingredients are going to bring. And so I think that, you know, underpinning all these sort of ingredients is this sort of inquiry into sort of flavor and texture and seasoning. I think actually, if we hone in on one ingredient, like you do in your podcast, you know, we were just talking about chocolate, for instance, and you really use that ingredient quite a lot, I think you become a better cook because, you know, you're using vinegar in a salad dressing, but you're using vinegar to roast vegetables. You're using vinegar to season some courgettes in a kind of agrodolce situation. And I think it really teaches you about flavor and about how these different ingredients react. So I think there's something really cool about kind of being like, right, this week I'm cooking with lemons.
Yes, yeah. No, it's a really good way of thinking about it, because I think one of the bugbears that people have with me and my cooking is, if I've used like a spice blend, like, I don't know, a Burrup blend or a Berber, or, you know, something that is not something you would find in your typical supermarket, you know, or your local grocers or whatever, you might have to search around for it. Once you've got it and you're only using that recipe, how on earth, as a novice cook, do you actually start experimenting with that in different cuisines if you don't have that sort of skill set to experiment? Oh, that's got a bit of cumin in, that's got a bit of cinnamon, and that's got an aromatic flavor. I wonder if that will pair with this vegetable instead. Most people don't have that reflex. So I think paring it down to the 12 ingredients that you personally love and that speaks to your cooking, and taking people, inviting people on a journey to like fully explore mustard or fully explore capers, you know, I think is a really intriguing way of just getting people more confident in the kitchen and their pantry.
Yeah, and I think that's like what I hope for my books. I'm sure you hope for yours as well. It's like, I hope that people walk away with applicable skills. Like, I don't want them to like be cooking, you know, the same recipe. I don't want them to walk away with the recipe. I want them to walk away as a better cook.
Yeah,
and I want, you know, eventually it's probably not good for the publishing and sales, but eventually I want them to be cooking on their own without books and, you know, having those instincts. And, you know, I think we'll always buy cookbooks. I still buy endless cookbooks for inspiration, and because I just love to flick through them. But, you know, I think that is where I think both of us, coming from different sort of vantage points, would love to get to, isn't it? It's kind of like helping teach those reflexes. And of course, there's amazing, wonderful cooks out there who would know how to use Ras Al Hanout in like 5,000 different ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are also people who really, you know, who grating a bit of lemon zest in feels like a fun and new and exciting thing. And
that's the thing. Like, just that simple act, I think we may take for granted. And the more I talk about like food as medicine, nutritional medicine, and bringing people along a journey of taking control of their health using their plates and this opportunity that we have 2 or 3 times every day, the more I realize you need to teach people the very basics of cooking and the uses of flavor. Because like you were just describing a kale and chickpea situation, that little drizzle of yogurt and that little marbling of harissa completely transforms something that might be seen for some people as a bit boring and a bit bland into something that is magical, adventurous, and something that they're proud to share with other people and genuinely enjoy. And so it's a really, really important facet, I think, of like not just cooking, but also like keeping people engaged and even like applying that to health.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think actually, because I'm a vegetarian cook, and people who, you know, maybe have come across my books might know that, but lots of people listening might not. And so for me, I think I know that not everyone is engaged in eating completely vegetarian or plant-based, but I think actually quite a lot of people have a bank of recipes, especially, you know, I'm talking about, you know, we're talking here in London, and I'm probably talking about, you know, my experience of, you know, British people. And in that term, I encompass, you know, what it is to be British and multicultural Britain. But I do think that quite a lot of, especially people who come from my background, like a pretty standard, you know, British upbringing, we've got a back catalogue of kind of meat and two veg from our childhood, but we don't have that back catalogue, that kind of cooking heritage of making vegetable-centered food delicious.
Right.
And so I think that is a really interesting place to come at flavour with as well, because, you know, quite often the meat or the fish can be the centre. It can be what is bringing the flavour, the texture. But when you take that away, I think sometimes people feel like they're sort of set adrift in the middle of a gigantic ocean, and they're not sure how to create those layers. So we were cooking with capers earlier.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, something like a caper, it's such an amazing thing to have in a little jar in your kitchen, because that is bringing umami, that is bringing acidity, that is bringing saltiness. And immediately, you know, we all know, you know, about capers in a puttanesca or on top of a pizza or whatever. But if you're making, like, you know, a tomato sauce, like finely chopping them, putting them in with the onions, with the garlic, and creating already that kind of like umami base layer.
Yeah.
And then making your tomato sauce, and then maybe sort of frying some in some olive oil and putting them on at the end. I find it really exciting when you can take one ingredient and then you can use it like a bunch of different ways.
Totally.
And I'm sure there must be health benefits to that, because if you think about a lemon, you know, there's the juice, there's the zest, there's something that happens when you roast it. And I'm sure, like, coming from your perspective as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you use every part of the
absolutely
ingredient.
Absolutely. Like, you know, it breaks my heart every time I see people not using the skins of their citrus vegetables in particular, because those phytonutrients, the natural pesticides that actually confer a lot of benefits to us when we consume them in moderate amounts, are actually concentrated on the outside.
Okay.
And they're also in the pith as well. And the pith can be quite bitter. And obviously the zest can be as well. But if you're using it judiciously and you're using it, you know, to finish a meal and you're trying to get all those different layers, I mean, it can be like a useful, flavorful ingredient as well as something that adds health benefits as well. And then, you know, you're just talking about capers, and we just cook with capers. You're adding another diverse fiber into your meal. So you're adding more plant points, and we know the more plant points in your meal, the more diverse it is for your microbes to thrive off. And everyone's talking about gut microbes these days, and it's a very important part. You know, there's little seemingly insignificant additions to your dish can actually accumulate over time in massive benefits. And that's something that we're seeing that's borne out by research as well.
It's fascinating to think about that, because, like, as me, you know, coming from a cook's perspective, like, I'm so excited to, like, zest over some zest. But knowing that that is adding something is, like, you know, kind of doubles the excitement. And, you know, I've actually been, there's a lemon chapter in this book, and I've been doing a lot of cooking with kind of whole lemons.
Nice.
And I mean, I love lemons. I feel like lemons are my kind of fruit spirit animal. Absolutely. And but really, you know, I've realized that actually using the whole lemon is not as crazy as it sounds.
Yeah.
So quite often I'll really finely slice lemon, then chop through it quickly, you know, with a knife. So you just have really tiny little poppy sherbety pieces. And then that goes through my green salad to give like an extra lift. Or there's a recipe in the book for a lemon tart where it's, you know, that's just very, very thinly sliced slices of lemon. And it just goes on top of this tart with cheddar and onions. And I mean, the base is puff pastry. So, you know, it's definitely a treat moment.
No, that's all good.
But, you know, But then that lemon, once cooked, completely caramelizes, yeah. and you like lose the bitterness of the pith.
Yeah.
And it becomes this kind of sweet caramelly situation. So it's really, you know, it's so interesting to kind of hear your perspective on all of these ingredients. And I totally. Feel like it that, you know, and you know, often when I hear you talk about ingredients, that then goes back and inspires kind yeah. of, you know, it sort of redoubles my efforts on like, yes, I'm using this yeah. or I'm using that. And vice versa. And yeah, it's so nice that totally. That kind of happens, isn't it?
And it's like even the way you describe food, like we were just cooking with capers and white wine vinegar, and you were like, we used white wine vinegar at the start of the meal and we used it at the end of the meal.
Mm.
And you said this word that really stuck with me. It perks it. It perks yeah. it up. It brings it back to life. And just the way you just said, it has that sherbety sort of flavor when you use the whole lemon, you finally chop it up. Like that gives me even more sort of inspiration of how these ingredients add something to a recipe. We have like these things that we always talk about in Doctor's Kitchen internally as well. We have the four E's of Doctor's Kitchen.
Mm.
So we educate people, obviously, by the podcast and the newsletter, and we do all these things on like deep dives on ginger and chocolate and all these ingredients. We entertain them. We want to be a joyful brand, hence the colors and all that kind
of stuff. Absolutely.
But we also want to entice and equip. Mm-hmm. So we want to entice people with deliciousness and flavor and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's where like learning from people like yourself who are putting all your effort and ingenuity into cookbooks like this is really inspiring for us. And then equipping people so they can actually utilize that information about, you know, how to use mustard, something that most people have in their fridges at home. Probably people have used capers maybe for like a salmon board that they made at Christmas.
Yeah,
it's still something you can use now. And so picking up this book right now and like using that in a different, completely different way is going to open up their eyes to how they can make healthful food, delicious food, and adventurous food.
And I think that entice bit is so important and interesting because, you know, I feel like this, you know, obviously you feel so passionately about getting people to eat, to feel amazing in their lives and to thrive. And you know, I definitely have the same feelings from coming from a slightly different perspective, but also this, you know, I feel strongly as well about the kind of, you know, the sustainability and environmental aspect of food. And to me, that word entice is so important because I just don't think anyone responds well to a finger waggy or a, you know, a sort of sensationalist headline or whatever else. And of course, you know, those things have to be said and we have to be honest about where we are in terms of sustainability and environment right now. But the entice bit is so exciting because if you can make, you know, vegetable-led food enticing and exciting, then that is the way to change things, isn't it? And that is the way to get people on board, you know, and it's such a nice word. I love that.
Oh, good. Maybe it could be the title of your next book. Entice.
Exactly. I'm just going to straight up steal it. I hope that's okay.
I want to talk about mustard actually, and just ways through. I mean, every book is a journey, right? You're trying new things along the way. I don't know how long you were taking to write this book, but I remember in previous books you were like, it took ages, like, you know, a couple of years or whatever.
Yeah.
But every time you sit down to create recipes, like you find novel ways of doing things. And I wonder if there are any ones that you can share about a particular ingredient. I'm particularly interested in using a bit more mustard, not just because like mustard is a fantastic, you know, flavor and all the rest of it. I just think it's one of those things that most people have got in the back of their fridge and they don't really know what to do other than like, you know, putting it on the side of meat and two veg or with the roast or whatever.
Yeah, well, I think mustard is a really versatile ingredient. I think for, you know, sort of teaspoon by teaspoon, there's nothing that brings more flavor than mustard.
I'm glad
really,
you
is
that?
It's like, it's great. It is so punchy, so powerful. And, you know, whilst I might have four or five mustards in my cupboard, you know, really, if you have a pot of Dijon or a pot of English mustard, you can do a lot of things with it. And obviously putting it on the side of stuff is transformative and a lovely way to eat it. Mm. But there are lots and lots of other ways. I mean, very basic things that most people will know is putting stuff into a salad dressing,
yeah.
or, you know, perhaps if you're making like, you know, a dressing, a mayonnaise. I love like egg mayonnaise. Like that's a really kind of common lunch in my house, but we don't make it with like, you know, thick tablespoonfuls of mayonnaise. What I usually do is like, you know, a little bit of Greek yogurt, a little bit of mustard, and then obviously capers because they're coming everywhere. Capers yeah. and whatever, you know, soft herb I've got. And then, yeah. you know, that's then stirred through the eggs and it's absolutely delicious. Yeah. So I think mustard, it, you know, it can be a front and center flavor, but also it's a really, really lovely kind of warming backup. Also, it's brilliant kind of, I find this with miso too, actually, with because it's miso and mustard have both got like, and actually miso and mustard go amazingly together. There's a miso and mustard roast beetroot kind of recipe.
Oh, wow.
In this book. But either or together. So if you're roasting veg,
yeah.
You know, just as they're sort of getting towards being brown, a tablespoon of mustard or a tablespoon of miso or a mixture of the two, then toss your veg through that and it kind of forms this unbelievable kind of umami crust.
Wow.
So really good with, you know, sort of if you're like roasting new potatoes yeah. or something as well. Also really, really brilliant kind of you know, base for like a tart or a pizza. Mm. There's a recipe in the book for something called Flammkuchen, which is, I'm pronouncing, sorry to any German speakers, I'm pronouncing really, really badly. But it's a really, really quick unleavened pizza. So uh-huh. you make a kind of dough, but it doesn't have any yeast in it. So you don't need to wait for it to rise in any way. Then you roll it out. And this, the one I've got, you know, then just has a great slick of kind of mustard on it.
Yeah.
Loads and loads of kale, some torn up mushrooms, and then that goes in the oven and becomes this kind
gorgeous.
Of
gorgeous,
absolutely delicious kind of, you know, I guess in the realms of pizza,
yeah,
but so deep and so delicious.
It's a German pizza. I've never heard of this.
Yeah, Flammkuchen. Sorry again to the German community, but
wow.
yeah, it's a really, really, really sort of delicious thing. And when I sort of made the unleavened dough, I thought brilliant because you can just
yeah.
you don't need to wait. You can just go for it. But also, I think mustard, you know, is such an important part of kind of. What Indian cooking, isn't it? And
yeah.
A good friend of mine, Monica,
Monica Gwardin.
Yeah.
She
cooks under
in
lovely
yeah.
cook in a curry, who I just adore. She actually lent me one of her gorgeous, one of her gorgeous aubergine curry recipes, which has mustard oil.
Nice.
It has mustard seeds, and it really uses kind of mustard in a way that is, you know, not something that comes from my heritage, but I felt like I really wanted to include,
yeah.
you know, that amazing recipe, and it's kind of punchy and it's spicy. And I
yeah.
think actually, you know, mustard is a spice, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
and we
yeah.
all think of it as this kind of like, you know, condiment which goes on the side of a ham sandwich. But first and foremost, it's an amazing spice and,
yeah.
and it brings that heat and it's completely.
My dad is like a massive mustard fan. So
yeah.
so he grew up in the farm in the village in Punjab, Northern India,
yeah.
and they grow a lot of mustard,
yeah.
and obviously you use it mustard oil, you use mustard seeds, you know, it's the base for a lot of curries, a lot of vegetable curries, like aubergine curries, all that kind of stuff. But he's like a big fan of mustard oil as like a miracle for everything, like knee pain and like
yes.
yeah, like headaches and like rub it on and stuff. And yeah. I remember just like ridiculing him, but actually, when you taste mustard and that pungency and that bitterness and that fieriness of it, it's actually representative of some of the powerful antioxidants that you have
yeah.
in the actual ingredient itself. And so, like, there aren't great studies looking at it because some of these things just don't get the attention that they deserve in nutrition. But it is one of those things of like, it is a powerful, and it's a spice. That's how
spice.
We should think
yeah.
about it.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. Actually, I've got an Estonian friend, and my little boy fell over and hurt his knee, and she came over with some mustard compresses,
yeah.
and we popped it on, and he was like, "What are you doing, Mom?" Yeah. And I was like, "Just go with me." And it's well, I mean, it seemed to do an amazing job at kind
yeah.
of, you know, healing, and you know, he did didn't bruise very much and stuff. And it can't, the thing is, it can't do any harm, no, can it? So, no. But yeah, it was amazing.
Miracle mustard oil, I'm telling you, my dad would love to hear that. He'll be so proud.
I like the sound of your dad. Finally,
he's talking about mustard oil. You should hear about the mustard oil stories I get from the farm.
Oh, I love it.
Were there any surprising uses of ingredients that you came across in this book with, you know, these sort of everyday staples and ways in which you included them in like a recipe in a novel way?
There's one that definitely like jumps out for that, which is caper and chocolate ice cream.
What?
So
caper and chocolate ice cream.
It's insane. It's the best ice cream. It's definitely the best chocolate ice cream I've ever had in my life.
I can't even imagine that.
It is wild. So I think capers are used in some kind of sweet cooking in some places in Italy. Yeah. I don't think it's a regular thing, but I definitely have seen like candied capers being used kind of in semifreddos and stuff like that. But when I was filming in my kind of previous life, working for Jamie Oliver, I went and worked with him on a TV show in Italy, and I think we were somewhere, not with him, but I was just sort of somewhere afterwards having, you know, a beer in the town square, and there was a caper and chocolate ice cream at this gelateria, and I was like, wow, amazing. So when I did the caper chocolate chapter of this book, I was like, I've got to do this.
Wow.
So I consulted my friend Kitty Travers, who is to me like the authority on ice cream. She has a brilliant ice cream business called La Grotta Ices, and she makes like these wild and wonderful ice cream combinations. Yeah. And I was like, Kitty, have you ever heard of chocolate and caper ice cream? She was like, of course I have, got a recipe. So she very kindly shared her recipe with me. But the capers, so it's in the world of like salted caramel.
Okay.
Which is so ubiquitous.
Yeah.
It's kind of everywhere. Yeah. But if you think about what salt does to caramel, it creates that kind of really Moorish rounded flavor. And the capers do exactly the same thing to the chocolate. You don't get an overwhelming caper sensation, but you just get this deep rounded kind of umami depth in the ice cream. And it is so good. It is so good. And also it's quite, it brings a richness to the ice cream. So you just need, you only need a little bit, you know, you just need like a few little teaspoonfuls and, you know, you're off. So
I'm telling you, I'm making that this weekend.
It is really, I can, yeah, highly, highly recommend.
My mind has been blown. This is the thing, like people always ask me like, how do you come up with new recipes all the time? Like, haven't all the recipes in the world already been done and like already tried and all that kind of stuff? Like, no, like there's just infinite combinations of things that you wouldn't even think of.
And it's just such... I just feel like you can never stop learning in food.
No.
And I'm sure the same goes for kind of medicine.
Oh, 100%.
And you can just never stop learning. And I think that, like, I feel, you know, I've been cooking as my job for, it's my 20-year anniversary of being like a cook for my job, which makes me feel really old. But let's not focus on that bit. But it's... you know, I just still feel excited. Mm. I still feel excited when I go into the kitchen and I'm like, right, what are we doing today?
Amazing.
And but it's not, you know, that's not Wednesday and Tuesday nights. I feel like I cook under the same pressure, you know, at the end of a long day trying to get dinner on the table for my kids as anyone else. So there I kind of like my, I get really excited on those kind of experimentation and testing days.
That's
as I'm
amazing.
Sure you do.
Yeah, I may, like I'm privileged to, you know, sort of cross both worlds. Like when you just said this is your 20th year anniversary in food, I was like, wow, I've been in medicine like since 2003. That's when I went to med school.
Yeah, it's
wild. And I've now like, you know, morphed my career into one that is as much food as it is medicine.
Yeah.
And I think the two really do go hand in hand. But you're right. You never stop learning. Like I was telling you, we had Satnam Sangera on the podcast a few weeks back, and he was just telling us about the history of empire and how you can tell the entire history of empire, the British Empire, that is, through food, nutmeg and the spice trail, and like the wars that were fought over these like spices that we completely take for granted today, things like cinnamon, but actually were completely novel to people in the West who hadn't ever experienced that. And I feel like we're having the same experience all the time, even now that we you know, are benefiting from globalization and endless travel and all the rest of it. I'm still learning so much, so much stuff.
And isn't it an incredible privilege to live in a time where we have access to all of this stuff? And I know that, like, you know, it's a strange time economically, isn't it? So it's not, I'm not saying that everyone has access to everything, but it is wonderful to live in a time where, you know, it feels, especially in, you know, the cities in the UK, that there is real multiculturalism and we can really, you know, access all these amazing flavors. I mean, we're so lucky.
Well, that's the thing that I love about the book as well, actually, because you're not saying go and buy the most expensive exotic spice that you can get your hand on or a particular blend. You're like, well, we're using capers. And wouldn't it be amazing to throw a bit of chocolate in there? Like, like things that are pretty accessible to most people. And the rest of it we made, you know, was just tomatoes, cauliflower, capers, a few other ingredients to add sweetness and depth. Like, these are really, really accessible. I've got to ask you the same question again. Are there any other, I don't think you're going to be able to top that with the capers, but are there any other novel ways? Because I learned something today from the caponata about using a bit of vinegar at the end as well as at the start of cooking. Little, like, accents of cooking that I pick up from, you know, other chefs and stuff.
It's kind of the seasoning. So it's like using, sometimes you can use ingredients throughout cooking as you would with salt. So I think we always think of salt as the seasoning and pepper, obviously. But I've got a whole, I have a whole bit of a thing about pepper as well, because I feel like it's just, especially in, like, you know, Western cooking, it's used as like the spice that is always added.
Yeah.
And to me, it's not always appropriate or needed or wanted, for me personally.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, whilst we live in this wonderful world of, you know, accessibility to all these things, like, why not add chili? Why not add coriander? You know, if you've got it in your cupboard, don't always add pepper. But no, I think this seasoning part, you can really think of in lots of different ways, because, you know, a fully rounded plate of food is going to be sweet. It's going to be savory. It's going to have umami. It's going to have bitterness. It's going to have, you know, acidity. And so if we think about seasoning and sort of, you know, as a sort of 360 thing, it's not just about salt. It's about adding all of these flavors, like, as we're cooking. And that sounds complicated. It's not. It's just about sort of, you know, thinking, oh, what's missing? And quite often someone might finish cooking and think, what's missing? And be like, oh, it doesn't taste good, gonna add more salt. And that's, sometimes that's right, but we don't want people eating tons and tons of salt. So most of the time, that's not what's missing. Yeah. It might be acidity. It might be a tiny bit of sweetness. It might be, you know, it might be like a verdant fresh flavor from some herbs. So I think in this book, I'm just sort of encouraging people to think, you know, just try and think in that 360 way about flavor. Because it makes, you know, it's more exciting to cook that way.
Totally.
Isn't it? It's more exciting to cook that way. It's more exciting to eat that way. And, you know, I think also then we are getting, as you say, you know, the zest of the lemon. We're getting all those extra kind of, you know, nutrients in because we're eating other delicious, fresh foods. I'm trying to think about what else. So back to capers. One thing that I think is a sort of, you know, little known fact is that the sort of caper brine, and it goes for like pickles and gherkins as well, the brine from capers and the brine from pickles are both unbelievable cooking ingredients. For instance, there's a focaccia in the book here that is, you know, it's a sort of, you know, old Puglian kind of recipe, but just before it goes into the oven, you know, the capers are studded into the focaccia, but then loads of caper brine is kind of sprinkled over the top of the focaccia. So instead of just putting loads and loads of like crunchy flaky salt on the top, you're putting in the brine that's going to season the focaccia kind of all the way through. So you're using an ingredient that otherwise would be thrown away.
Yeah.
But you're also seasoning in a completely different way. Mm. And the same goes for kind of, you know, gherkins, pickles. So if I'm ever making like a salsa verde, or if I'm making a tartar sauce, or if I'm, you know, making the egg mayo that we talked about earlier, instead of adding vinegar or lemon there, You know, wherever I'm using capers or cornichons, I will just add like a little swig of the vinegar from the jar. And it's free, essentially. And also it will have like a deeper flavour because it's been pickling, you know, those things. So I think that's one kind of really fun way to use ingredients a bit differently. I
love that because, I you know, most people don't think to use the drags of like an ingredient. And you're losing out on flavor. It's not even, you know, there's definitely a waste consideration there. I think that's super important. But I think if you come at it from, well, you're missing out on a flavor, you're missing out on the opportunity of just like lifting that meal ever so slightly, but it has a like demonstrable impact. I think that's probably the way to get people wasting less.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And and that's, you know, my last book I wrote before this was very sort of honed in on sort of the sustainability conversation and how we can cook and eat and live really with a lighter load. And so this book kind of echoes that, and that's why I've tried to keep to like only a few ingredients in each recipe.
Yeah.
So that you're not, you know, the less you buy for each recipe, the less you're going to waste.
Yeah.
And trying to cook in like one vessel, for instance, because a lot of the research I did for my last book was around kind of energy use in the kitchen. And actually, you know, we use, I think it's like a third of our household energy is used in the kitchen. So if you turn on the oven, the grill, two hobs, a blender, do you know what I mean? All of these other things, which some recipes encourage you to do. Number one, you've got absolutely loads of washing up. But number two, you're using like a load of energy you don't really need to use. So whilst one pan is kind of brilliant from a simplicity and time-saving perspective, it's also amazing from an energy use perspective. I think those kind of simple tweaks are, because I think so much of the conversation of food is about like, what can you buy to make you a better cook?
Yeah.
Or what can you, where can you shop to make you a better cook?
Yeah.
And that actually excludes quite a lot of people from the conversation, because farmers markets, firstly, aren't everywhere. Mm. Secondly, aren't available to quite a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so these things like not wasting food, like cooking in one pan, they are conversations that we can have that are applicable to everyone. And that feels really, I think, important to me. And I'm sure important to you as well.
Yeah, we were just talking about social media and how we both hate it, right? Earlier on. And like, I just thought of an idea for you for like a series of like simple tweaks to recipes, like easy wins almost to help with the book and everything else. But like, it could be the really simple things that we take for granted because we're in this food world.
But
people on the outside who aren't writing books and aren't like, you know, watching a whole bunch of different chefs and getting inspiration from other people wouldn't think to do. So the little zest at the end of a meal, we take that for granted. Most people don't think to do that. The little marbling of like, you know, a harissa or yogurt or whatever, like to finish a meal. We take that for granted. Yeah. Most people. So I can imagine like this series of like, I don't know, 20 of Anna Jones' hacks to just elevate your meal, that easy win right at the end. You know, it can be simple, as simple as like that little dash of whatever at the end of it. I'm telling you, you should do that.
I love it. I love it. Can you, I mean, can you just keep coming up with ideas for me? Actually, at the beginning of the book, there is a little section that I've written and it's called Golden Rules for Easy Wins. And that is all about, just bring it up now, but that is all about the kind of like, more from a cooking perspective, but it's all about the kind of things that I think make you a better cook. And one of the really simple things I think is like that I learned when I first did a shift at a restaurant is that every chef has their chopping board there, they have their knife, they have whatever else, but then next to them they have a little mixing bowl for all of their scraps.
Yes.
So when they're cooking, when they're chopping, all the scraps go in there, your work surface is clear, your head is clear, makes you a better cook.
Yeah.
And of course, like if they're veggie scraps, then those can go into a sandwich bag, straight in the fridge to make stock, you know, when you're feeling wholesome and smug about life. So, you know, it's just, it's the buying, it's the shopping, but it's also, I think, the choreography in the kitchen and the choreography of a recipe. And like, I geek out about recipes. Like in this book, I have kind of, you know, I've written, this is my fifth book and I've written books, you know, helped other people write books as well for many years before this. And so like the actual mechanics of a recipe to me feel so important.
Mm,
yeah. So in this book, I've tried to like make the recipes like, I've just geeked out. So in, as well as putting like 250 grams in the ingredients list, that is then repeated in the recipe. So gotcha. When you're reading through the recipe,
you don't need to
go back and you don't lose your place. Yeah. And it's all these kind of tiny, tiny, tiny things that seem like nothing. But actually, when you've got 15 minutes to make food, your kids are screaming, your girlfriend or boyfriend is like in a huff and you want to like get some food on the table, they make a difference,
absolutely, don't they? Absolutely. Mm. And that's such a like just that little I'm gonna start doing that on my next week. Actually, I'm gonna steal that from you, Hannah.
Oh yeah, well it's, but, we've all got the same goal, haven't
totally,
we?
Totally, yeah but that's actually one of the things that people pick up even on the app. They're like, I want to be able to see exactly how many grams of this particular ingredient is in the recipe without having to flick back to the ingredients list and then find what one it is. And the little simple things like that, that, you know, it just shows that you're really tuned into your audience and who you're making this for.
Yeah, I hope so. I think, you know, there's no point making it just another cookbook, is there? You want it to be used. You want it to be loved. You want it to be splattered.
Yeah, and this is going to get splattered.
I hope so. Well, it's already splattered on the end paper, so we'll start it off.
I love your cooking. I really appreciate you coming on. I love you. Love the fact that you came to the studio. You christened it for us. It's great.
Oh, Rupi, I'm so happy to be here. It's just a complete pleasure. And yeah, it's just, yeah, lovely to chat.
Great, great. Well, you have to come back soon. I want to try this bloody caper chocolate ice cream.
Oh, yeah, and also there's a caper brine margarita too. What? Which maybe one time.
I'm going to have
maybe
that.
One time. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Anna. I appreciate it so much.
Such a pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Doctor's Kitchen Podcast. Remember, you can support the pod by rating on Apple, follow along by hitting the subscribe button on Spotify, and you can catch all of our podcasts on YouTube if you enjoy seeing our smiley faces. Review show notes on the doctorskitchen.com website and sign up to our free weekly newsletters where we do deep dives into ingredients, the latest nutrition news, and of course, lots of recipes by subscribing to the Eat, Listen, Read newsletter by going to thedoctorskitchen.com/newsletter. And if you're looking to take your health further, why not download the Doctor's Kitchen app for free from the App Store? I will see you here next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.